Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I'm Coach Al, joined again by Doc Strecker. We're really happy you joined us today. And as always, I like to ask my partner, how you doing, Doc?
Coach, I'm great today.
Awesome.
It is a beautiful day in sunny Old Saybrook.
Right?
As it often is.
That's right. We got some storms a-brewing, though, and you're going to be out there sailing in off the eastern seaboard in the next few days. And
should be good.
The waves may be rocking and rolling, and that will determine whether or not I'm actually enjoying it. We'll see what the weather
brings. It's always sunny inside, man. It's always sunny inside.
Yeah. Or hanging over the edge.
Yeah, however
right?
you go.
It's sunny there, too.
However you go.
Yeah, good stuff. I've done a couple of podcasts recently without the benefit of having you on board, so it's great to be back in front of the mic again.
I think people think you're much more interesting anyway.
I don't think that's true at all, but I always enjoy having a conversation with somebody other than myself. And, luckily, I've had the benefit of getting Larissa Danis on and Rachel, and of course Dr. Tamara Hugh recently
yep.
to talk about
all people who are more interesting than me. So that's a very good thing.
Good stuff, man. All right. Well, we've got what I think is an absolutely fascinating series of topics to talk about today. And I've been excited about this podcast because the topics of talent and skill acquisition and also training progression and for each of us really reaching our ultimate potential, whatever that potential is, how much of what we can ultimately achieve as an athlete or as an individual person is born within us or is something we acquire, nature or nurture, if you will. These are really fascinating topics of discussion and something that I've thought about for a very long time. And certainly in my life history as a musician and as a woodworker and cabinet maker and also as an athlete, all of these things have played a role in my own development. So the topics we're going to talk about today really have come out of some questions that we've had from some athletes we work with. First, one who's struggling a little bit with her progression in terms of her training, and we'll talk about that and how this all ties together. And the idea of talent really came up in a discussion that sort of happened completely organically on Facebook that one of our coaches, Susan Ford, started a discussion, if you will, off of a post that she had. And, quickly the hot button in that string became this idea of talent. Where does it come from? For every one of us that's out there training and working hard to improve, how much does our own natural ability or talent as an athlete play in what we're ultimately able to achieve? In my own mind, these topics really align and they're very, very symbiotic. They all kind of play into one simple yet incredibly profound idea or set of concepts, I guess, if you will, that we've got a process we're going to engage in. On some level, we've got some natural ability, but ultimately, the winner is the person that stays with it, works really hard every day, deliberate practice, and ultimately will not be denied. Don't give up or give in. But before we get to that, I guess, you know, that was a long intro, Doc. I got to take a breather, man.
No, that's all good, yeah. Man. That's all good.
No. So let's talk about the idea of talent, right? Where does it come from? And how much does it really matter? You know, a lot of our listeners are age group triathletes and runners and athletes, maybe field sport athletes, and they're wondering, you know, how good can I be? And all of us look around and go, well, that one or Susie or Tommy is clearly more talented than I am. They're faster or, you know, they seem to be better. So we're instantly, even at a very young age, judging ourselves and wondering what our true natural gifts are. And you know, everywhere we look, there's the same kinds of things, the references to those that clearly seem to be more talented. You know, in our sport, triathlon and running and endurance sports in particular, there's this whole idea of, on one hand, athletic ability that relates a lot to strength and flexibility and mobility and speed and quickness. And on the other hand, there's the elements of the motor, the physiological talent. In our world, it's maximal aerobic capacity. You know, we've all heard the elite Grand Tour cyclists and their very, very high maximal aerobic capacity numbers, the cross-country skiers mm-hmm. from the Scandinavian countries. And, you know, that motor, how much oxygen our body can process at any moment in time, affects a lot of different things, and it is largely genetically determined. How important is that maximal aerobic capacity to our ability to improve or reach a certain level of performance, whatever that may be, whether it's to podium at our local race, beat our friend, or literally reach a world championship. So we've got the athletic elements, the physiological elements or talent, and creates a lot of confusion for the individual person, you know. And I know for me, one thing that I'll think about or that I often think about is imagine if you're back in high school and you show up at gym class and the class that day is to run the quarter mile in track. And so you and your buddy line up next to each other and you both take off at the same time and he finishes in 65 seconds and you finish in 95 seconds and you go, okay, well, I can clearly see who's more talented, who's got the bigger motor. What do you do with that? And how does that impact how you might develop moving forward? I've got more thoughts about it, but I'll let you jump in, Doc.
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's also, you know, when you look at you know, one athlete versus another, one sport versus another, I think if we're talking about Olympic quality sprinters or Olympic caliber you know, cross country skiers, then all of the pieces have to be present, right? You probably need to have the motor from an innate ability. You need to have the ability to do that. You need to have the stick-to-itiveness. You have to have the instruction. You have to have the desire to you know, to be the best. All of those things have to be in line if you're going to be, you know, the best in the world at, you know, whatever one of these things we're aiming at. When you're looking at triathlon, running, from an age group perspective, boy, you know, we're not talking about people who are spending their entire lives training, right? We all have jobs and children and other demands. So now we're talking about, you know, really desire, largely, in many of these cases. Now, certainly, if you have a big motor, if you're born with a big motor, you're at an advantage in one respect. But, you know, on the other side of that coin, if you can make a lot of power and you can run really fast, if your mechanics are not good, you may be even more prone to injury, right? And how many athletes do we see who come in the door who have big motors, but they've got a torn hip labrum, or they have a shoulder issue or a back problem or a knee issue? And so when you can take that 500 horsepower motor and drop it in that rusty VW bug, parts are going to start coming apart. you know, stuff's going to start falling off of that car. So, you know, the human frame is no different. And you referenced the, you know, innate, you know, VO2 max and you know, talent and that sort of stuff. We also have what they often call in the animal world or the horse world, conformation, right? The shape of our bodies. So that's a contributing factor as well. So, and probably the biggest contribution that has is toward propensity for injury. You know, women with broad hips and, you know, knees that knock and, you know, that Q angle, that's significantly different than guys. You know, you've really got to make sure that all of those things work well. You've got to be strong and stable and all the things that we preach all the time. But you know, if the shape is there that lends itself toward injury, you've got to be, you know, 15 times stronger. So there's a lot of variables, Coach.
Yeah, there is for sure. And you know, I guess one thing, of course, that's worth acknowledging is that talent comes in many, many forms. And certainly for each of us, we're very likely more talented in some areas than in other areas. And certainly as a parent, you want to try to help your children find the areas in which they seem to be a little bit more naturally gifted and the areas in which they tend to really enjoy. Those are good places to spend if you're a child. You know, good time to spend in areas where and doing things that, you know, that you're both good at and that you really,
yep,
really, really enjoy. You know, we certainly know, and for any of the folks that have listened to us on the podcast or certainly members of our team, athletes that have come through our analysis here at Pursuit Athletic Performance, we talk a lot about, you know, Dan Coyle's talent code and Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers as two books that really reflect this idea that talent, at least in part, comes from deliberate practice. You know, I was sharing with you this morning this research paper that I was reading through, The Role of Deliberate Practice in the Acquisition of Expert Performance, 1993, from K. Anders Ericsson et al. And very, very interesting. I mean, you know, the conclusion to this very long and lengthy and detailed paper is simply that other than height being one thing that's genetically prescribed, as you talked about conformation, and it goes beyond height because it is about the shape and ratio and length of the bones and our torso and trunk to legs and so forth. I mean, so many factors, especially if you're a runner or a triathlete. But it, with the exception of those things, they argue in this paper that the differences between expert performers and normal adults reflect a lifelong period of deliberate effort to improve performance in a specific domain. And, you know, I can tell you, Doc, you know, on that topic, you know, I have the advantage now of being a runner for 30 years. I've been coaching actively for about 15. So I've seen a lot of athletes. I've worked with a lot of folks, many, many, many athletes. And everyone that comes to me for coaching or has a question about training presents to me with a different level of natural ability and a different experience level as it relates to the things you were talking about, right? That relate to whether or not they have an individual conformation that makes them more susceptible for injury. Some come with a little bit more experience on the athletic end. They've done some strength training or some other movement-oriented training. Other folks have less of a natural ability as it relates to a motor, meaning that they've been racing for a while, but they just haven't performed as well as they'd hoped. They're slower than most of their, you know, counterparts. And one thing I know for sure is that the folks who have the larger motor, the bigger motor, the more natural ability physiologically are going to go faster earlier in their development, and they're going to need less of quote-unquote training hours to achieve a higher level of performance. And similarly, as they continue to train and develop, their risk of injury may continue to stay the same or it may go up because, as you mentioned, you put that big horsepower motor in that rusty VW chassis and ultimately or potentially the parts are going to start coming off. So what's the take home there? One thing I really want folks to be able to glean from this podcast today is if you believe, and the research is, I think, there, and my experience certainly is, that if you believe that you can stick with a process and do whatever you can to find better ways to improve your skills and develop and learn your weaknesses, work on those, et cetera, stay the process, stick with the process. The more you can do that, the more you're going to close the gap with someone who may be more physiologically gifted. And similarly, if you happen to be one of those that's more gifted, you've got to do the other things that are necessary, or ultimately your talent may be not expressed. You may not be able to express it in the ways that you might want to because of injury or illness or some other factor. You had a quote which you showed me yesterday, which I think is going up on the wall in our facility. What was that? Hard work?
Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Yeah, and, right? And that's really, it's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, you know, again, at the sharp end of things, if you're talking about, you know, the Olympics or, you know, whatever, then you got to have all of them, and it might be the motor that makes the difference, given, you know, effort and talent and, you know, the stars being aligned and all of those things. But, you know, for the vast majority of us, there's always room to improve. And even if you look at Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or, you know, any of these guys who are performing at, you know, the highest of levels, you know, these are folks that are continually working on their game. You say, well, you know, these guys are making bazillions of dollars. And nah, for them, it's not really about that. I mean, certainly, I'm sure they're thrilled that they're making that money, but I think their pursuit is to continue to get better and to win the Super Bowl and to achieve at the highest level. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be winning races, you know, in your age group. You have to get out of it what you want. Because at the end of the day, we're not really racing against anybody else, particularly in these endurance events. We're racing against ourselves. And, you know, you are your own benchmark. Now, you know, if you're in the last mile of the Ironman and your competitor is next to you, you know, it maybe gets a little different. But for the you know, the most of that race, you're racing yourself. You have a plan. You've trained specifically. You know what your goal wattage is. You have all of these things that are going to be involved. And it's not a you know, a 30-second race, right?
I mean, no, not at all.
It's a long day. So all of those pieces have to be in place, and you have to address them and execute. And so, you know, in whatever the sport is, whether it's soccer or lacrosse or triathlon, if you want to get better, you have to work on the things that that you're not good at. And running faster doesn't necessarily mean you need to just go out and run fast all the time.
Yeah,
right.
For sure. Well, you know, you mentioned, you know, Peyton and Tom, and you know, there's many examples of elite-level expert performers that have worked hard every day to become students of their sport and try to achieve some kind of level of mastery. And I think that is really what it boils down to. I know for myself, I find myself a lot of the time taking a simple exercise and exploring it, taking a simple training tool and exploring it. Now, in the same way that I might have many years ago in the practice room, working on a certain etude or phrase in a piece of music. And those guys working on their footwork, that's what they love. I don't think it has anything to do with the money. They love the money, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But they're, when they step onto the field, they're football players trying to get better, you know, trying to be better. And, you know, I love this one quote, which comes from this research article. Far more important in determining the impact that your life has and the expertise you achieve is how much time you have for deliberate practice. ironically, despite the inherent difficulty, devotees of deliberate practice routinely find it takes them less time to learn new subjects and master difficult material. And along with that, and this really leads into the second part of our talk today, specific tasks as part of that deliberate practice are invented to overcome weaknesses, and performance is carefully monitored to provide cues for ways to improve it further.
That's I love that.
It's a great one. Yeah,
absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, that's what coaching is for me, is helping an athlete to be able to, you know, take that next step, go to that next level, help them find whatever it is, that cue, that feedback. Some of us need a training group to perform with. Some of us need a personal trainer to watch us and monitor our progression. We all could benefit from objective feedback on whatever skills we're working on. And you know, a big part of improving is finding whatever it is that we need to continue that progression.
And that can be a challenging part of it, right? That can be the most challenging part, developing a specific plan. I mean, I remember often in sailing, you know, we'll set up in one design where you're racing the same kind of boat, we'll set up boats side by side identically. You know, the same tension on the masts and all the sails exactly the same. And we'll make quarter-inch adjustments and take notes. Put the boat side by side, see if one goes faster or closer to the wind. And these notebooks, you know, that we would develop were, you know, fairly extensive and learning about, you know, in certain situations, what makes the boat go faster. So, you know, that's one example. But, you know, if you're having trouble with your half front plank with a reach, you know, being in front of the mirror and being able to use a dowel or, foam rollers as references, those are the things, too, that you need to address one at a time.
Yeah, great stuff, Doc. I mean, you know, so many analogies, and they're all really important ones, and they really speak very simply to this idea that whatever your natural ability is, whatever physiological gifts you've been given, you can achieve on a very high level. Whatever it is you're looking for, pretty much, with the exception of maybe that world championship or Olympics caliber, where, as you alluded to earlier, and correctly so, all of these elements need to be in place when you're talking about the best in the world. But ultimately, for most of us, it isn't about that. It's entirely about reaching our potential, whatever it is. So regardless of your natural gifts, there is so much that we can achieve if we're willing to approach it from this viewpoint of deliberate practice, development of skills. And, you know, before we get on to this next segment, I'll say, I think at the end of the day, the biggest challenge is motivation. The biggest challenge is finding the desire within us to wake up and keep going after it. You know, for me, it's always been relatively easy in many areas to find that motivation, but not in all areas, right? And I think those of us that really achieve at the highest level are able to do the things that most people don't want to do, right? When you get up, are you willing to spend a little extra time, as you mentioned, on that half front plank with a reach? Or are you just going to get on and do something else that's maybe a little more fun or a little more pleasurable? You know, I tell you, man, I did a continuous plank series this morning, and I was thinking to myself, who the hell developed this, you know, hellish progression?
I think that was you.
It hurts every time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
it hurts every freaking time. Yeah, and what I found, and you know, I'm ramping up my training a little bit. When you get tired, man, is a side plank harder to do, you know, when your body is just a little bit more tired.
Yep.
So let's take this just a little bit further and touch on something that's a little bit more specific to our sport, and even some specific to some of our team members, and in fact every athlete that we interact with, and that is this idea that where in my development will I really see the results that I'm looking for? You know, so many folks come in and they have a gait analysis, and they go through our initial phase of restoration and foundation training. Sometimes they think just because they meet you, they're going to get faster and healthier, right? I was hoping that for the longest time. the truth is exposure to us, exposure to our systems, exposure to our expertise does not in and of itself make anybody better, faster, or healthier. What it does is give them tools to begin the process. And if we find we're plateauing, that's where the challenge really comes. Or if we feel like, hey, I've done this amount of work for this amount of time, I should be better, I should feel better, I shouldn't continue to have that same feeling of that injury that I was battling for the longest time. Sometimes, folks, I almost think, you know, these guys told me if I did this for X number of weeks, I'd be better. And why am I not better? You know? And I think it relates entirely to this idea of deliberate practice. But what are your thoughts?
No, I think that's absolutely it. And you know, it's about connecting the dots in a logical way, creating a plan, sticking to that plan, and addressing your weaknesses. No different in, you know, in business planning, right? We just got a little lesson in that.
Yes,
right?
We did.
And it's
we get lessons,
you know,
all the time.
Yeah, exactly. We do. We do.
Usually so, in a zero.
So that's
negative numbers.
So, you know, it's 100% correct. If you want to get better, you can get better. It almost never comes as fast as you want it to.
Never.
Right? It's
never
not going to happen.
And we all have different, you know, issues we're dealing with. You know, somebody who has been dealing with a chronic injury that's gone on for weeks or months or even more than a year is going to have a harder time
absolutely
overcoming that.
And even speed and setting realistic goals is a challenge as well. And sometimes it's hard to shape those goals. So, for example, we had an athlete who said, you know, I rode, 14 miles an hour and I wanted to ride 18 miles an hour. Well, you know, a mile an hour goal on a bike is not a very realistic goal. There are too many variables involved, right? You could target a power number and say, I want this to be my power, but first you have to test power. You have to know that power exists. You have to test power. And you have to use that in your training, and you have to use that in your racing. And then you can measure, did I improve or didn't I? You have an objective kind of a number. But a mile an hour goal, we know, is you know, you got wind and you got temperature and you got a million different things going on here. So there's no real, you know, that's not a realistic goal to try and go after. So, and that's just one example. So being able to set realistic goals, is being able to shape those is a very important part of this process, because if you don't get a realistic goal or have a realistic goal, you're never gonna achieve it, and you're gonna be frustrated.
Yeah, without question. You know, when we talk about goal setting, I always come back to this idea that wherever we are in any level of development or phase of development, and whatever the activity may be, and let's just use running as an example because it's an easy one and many of our listeners are runners. You know, in the beginning, you're trying simply to learn a little bit about the sport and sort of getting a sense of how your body feels at a certain effort level. You might want to, you know, begin to think about rating of perceived exertion. How hard am I breathing? You may find you're using a heart rate monitor. Now you have that heart rate number to connect with your effort, cycling the same way. And I think in the beginning, the best place to be is where you're process-oriented, you know, where you're trying to achieve a certain feeling and where you're trying to hit simple and easy-to-achieve goals which will reinforce a positive feeling and help you to continue to be motivated to continue to improve. Become a student of the sport in the process. So you learn a lot about your body, you learn a lot about a feeling. Of course, ideally, you're putting together the mechanics as well too, and working on the elements, the foundation, which is so important for progression. But it takes a certain level of experience before you start to really look at objective measurements of performance, a certain pace, training at a certain speed, understanding what different effort levels and different speeds are at different distances and what's appropriate. Sometimes I think folks get, you know, they jump too fast into that progression, When the truth is, what they really need to do is focus on finishing, especially that race, mm-hmm. whatever that race may be.
Right.
Finish feeling good, you know. Finish feeling like you performed well, but that you could have gone faster or harder, and hopefully you've retained some motivation and enthusiasm to continue on your progression of learning.
Sure, avoid the burnout.
avoid the burnout. Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's the difficult thing about miles per hour numbers on the bike, is they just, you know, they're completely disconnected to actual effort, right? And whether or not
right.
an effort is appropriate.
And you know, in everyone's defense, when you come into the sport, you know, you get a bike and a bike computer, and a bike computer gives you cadence and speed. So that's all you have. You know, power meters are expensive, and people don't run right out and buy one. Most people don't run right out and buy one with their first bike and jump on that. So, you know, if you just have a speedometer, then, you know, your miles per hour would be the first goal that you would look at. But it's not a realistic kind of a thing. So, you know, there's a lot of thought that goes into that process. But, you know, you've really got to just wrap your brain around the idea that you want to take little steps in the correct direction and continue to improve.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think without question, you know, to kind of wrap things up here, my advice for anyone who's somewhere on that process, on that continuum where they may have plateaued or where they may have reached a point where they're really frustrated and they're questioning whether or not they should go on, or whether they can or can't do it. I mean, that's a question we always ask ourselves, you know, can I really do this? My advice is for that individual is to get some really, really good feedback or guidance or advice from an expert, and find ways to learn more about what your weaknesses are. Be determined and absolutely obsessed with this idea that I can tweak what I'm doing, I can change it, I can improve it. You know, we encourage folks to come into our lab if they're finding that they're not having success with something, and let's look at what, you know, at some of the exercises. You often say you could do many of these 95% correctly and not get the benefit from them, so that 5% can make the difference. For some folks, it's a different approach to an exercise. From a training viewpoint, it's flipping things around a little bit with a training plan to find a better way to set up your workouts so that you can achieve more success. Be determined and absolutely obsessed with continuing on the process, but not by doing the same things over and over again. You know, that old adage about the definition of insanity. Got to tweak it, you know. You got to tweak things and look at different ways of doing things, and don't give up. You know, don't give up. If it's something that's important to you, you shouldn't give up.
Amen, brother.
All right. You want to sign us out?
Oh, it's all you.
It's all me.
You're good like this.
Really?
Yeah. You got the rap, man. Everybody wants to finish off with a coach's rap.
All right. Here we go. You got it, bro. Thanks so much for joining us today, folks. We really appreciate it. We did a lot of rambling today, Doc. Hopefully there are some thoughts here that are helpful
lucid.
To people. Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing I know for sure is that regardless of your talent, we all have more within us than we ever could ever possibly imagine. And so don't give up or give in, man. And with that, I'll sign off. Everybody have a great day. We'll look forward to catching you soon on the podcast. Doc, we'll see you around, bro.
Stay happy, stay healthy, and enjoy your training. Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.